hog dogs, and they don't train those to catch hogs.
Well, wild hogs.
Hmm? Wild hogs, yeah.
Yeah, that must
be. They go down in the house and catch them.
That must be quite a sport.
Yeah. I don't care anything for things like that, and I wouldn't go down in that hammock, not to even just to look it over. I'm definitely afraid of that hammock. I was close to it down there at Crystal River, and could have gone up there any time. I ought to have gone to see the keys by all means while I was down in there. There's a road over that way.
Oh, you mean that big hammock down on the
Gulf hammock.
Hammock. Yeah.
You reading the papers not long ago about the little boy that was lost in there?
I read about it, yeah.
What do you reckon came of that boy?
I don't know.
By himself and lost, you know, and he would cry and travel. He wouldn't be still any place for long, calling daddy, you know, and hunting for somebody, and night came on. When night came, he didn't know where he was going, and he could have stepped into a deep hole.
Oh, yes.
But then it's just possible that a gator swallowed him whole.
Mm-hmm.
There never was any evidence of where he had been last seen. They found a stocking or a sock or something, but I don't know whether it was his or someone else's.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of clouds floating.
Yeah. Looks like they're lifting a little bit.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if we know some of these days have one of them cyclones. They're getting to be a nuisance.
Oh, yes.
All over the country.
Yeah.
I read a book, just finished it yesterday or the day before, about the cyclones that up in Nebraska and Iowa and Illinois, and then the floods that came following after those.
Yeah.
Just way back in 1912 and 13, long there. And that's the awfulest thing to read about you ever read in your life.
Yeah.
And just never will know how many people were killed, drowned.
Yeah.
Houses were swept away on the Miami River and several, four or five other rivers. Dayton was the worst hit. No, that ain't the one. No. Yes, it was. Dayton, I believe. Where the right over though, and watched one roll along on top of the trees in the west, about 10 or 12 miles west of it. And the next morning, word got there that it had struck a little mining settlement where there was a big commissary, and the schoolhouse was in the edge of the path of the storm. And the railroad ran a train out there of flat cars and box cars, and might have had one coach. I don't remember now. That town, except the floor and foundation of the commissary, everything above that floor of that commissary was gone.
And you could take the train out there for $1 round trip.
Yeah, the railroad company ran a train out there. There's an iron mine there.
You seen him?
Young fella, just married.
His
name is Wood. Underwood.
Underwood.
Yeah, Underwood. And Morris, the fellow that was here, the old bachelor, he got a little church called Faith Church at Tampa. And he ought not to be in the preaching without a family. And they built that lovely parsonage, and big enough for six or eight people. And there he was living in it by himself.
Yeah.
But he's gone now, and this young couple coming, and they'll like it all right, but it's big enough, of course, for a big family.
Yeah.
And what this conference, this charge of the conference needs here is a middle-aged couple with two teenage children to help build up the
yes.
young folks, you know, mm-hmm. in the Sunday school.
Yeah. I believe older ones are better than the younger ones, Howard.
Yeah.
And a minister who's a little older.
Now, this young couple, of course, they just had to send them somewhere, and they sent them to Meganope.
Mm-hmm.
Meganope every year catches somebody that's just trying to get started in
yeah.
the Methodist Conference.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of a starting place for preachers. I had two brothers-in-law came to this conference from other states, and both of them started at Meganope.
Yeah.
Brother Cook and Dr. Hilburn.
Yeah.
And two of my sisters.
Mm-hmm. You know.
But you can't very well do it. The prices have got so high now that it's difficult to buy anything at all. There, look at that dog. He's a whopper.
He's a whopper, yeah.
And just a pup, too.
Hmm.
Well, I go to some Baptists that are good to me, and the Methodists never have done anything for me. They just don't come for me at all. That preacher never came to see me but three or four times while he was here. And the Baptist soul will come for me anytime I want to go anywhere. They'll come and take me all over the country. And Miss Thrasher comes every Sunday night and takes me down to their church. Even when there's church up here, I'll go down there with her because she comes from in. I don't want to be running around at night in the dark. And she takes me to church and brings me home. And then every other Monday, Mr. and Mrs. Rosenberg that lives out here, they're Baptists, they come by here and pick me up, and I go with him down to Ocala. He has to go to a chiropractor down there every other Monday. And I get ready, and I'm always ready when they come by. And they take me down there, and we all buy our groceries down there.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything. They go every... he's a treasurer for the church down there. And he goes to Gainesville before he comes down here and goes to Ocala. So they buy most of their stuff in Gainesville. Leave it at home and then come by and pick me up, and we'll go down to Ocala. He goes to the chiropractor, and then we go to the A&P and Quick Check or wherever we want. If there's anything that we want at any other store, we go there. And I saw where Fremack down there was going to move out of the building they were in into another location, and they were selling out at greatly reduced prices, and it enabled me to buy a suit of clothes. I never would have been able to buy a suit of clothes again in my life if that sale hadn't been on.
Is that right?
And I went there and got a good suit of clothes for $30. Paid cash for it.
Well, that's you're lucky. How'd you find out about it?
Saw it in the paper.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you.
And they had a notice on the front of their store down there, too, moving and selling out.
That's a good store.
Yeah.
I bought stuff at Fremont.
They got a store in Gainesville.
Yeah. What are they doing, just moving there in Ocala?
No, they got a store in both towns.
Yeah.
They moved out into one of those shopping centers.
Yeah.
They were downtown there, just across the street from the old courthouse square, and they were evidently paying a good price for that location.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine they could buy a lot and build and save money.
Mm-hmm.
and I get all my medicines and drugs or things that I need, or any other. Now, for instance, I have to wear suspenders with this appliance that I have to wear from my double hernia. I can buy suspenders down there, and I can't get them in Gainesville. They don't have them like this. I've hunted all over town. And I wear them to hold up that device.
Uh-huh.
Pull it up tight, you know, as possible. And it even then don't hold my hernia. My hernia got a great big double handful almost there down in my pants. But I get myelin with some manual labor around here, and by being careful and not straining too hard.
Mm-hmm.
I even push my lawnmower.
Mr. Howard, I saw one of your old neighbors out here in the country down here at sitting in front of Buck Weaver's store one afternoon, and he said he had been up here to visit with you.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's old man Boyd.
Yes.
He comes in every once in a while, see. He lives in the old Slappy place out there next to my father's old grove, the old Johnson Grove.
Mm-hmm.
It was. And it was frozen in 95. And my sister Margaret, and that owned this place over here, she and I came down. Father had come over here to visit Dr. Hilburn and our older sister, and fell in love with the orange business and bought a grove before he went home.
Yeah.
And fixed it up and had it in good shape, bearing, pruned and all, fertilized. And then he went home and just gave away everything up there and moved down here in 93, brought our youngest sister with him, and mother. Mother had TB, and the doctors had said that it would be a best thing for her if she could come to Florida. And he didn't waste any time. When he saw what was over there, he fell for it heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Bought that grove, went back up there and gave away nearly everything he had, and left a whole lot of my finest furniture in the house. Piano and a big secretary, bookcase and desk combined. I don't know what all he left in that house.
Mm-hmm. He couldn't wait, could he?
He couldn't. He put what he did bring to Florida in a car, and it was sent on down here ahead of them, and they were going to stop along through Evansville, Indiana, and Effingham, Illinois. And he was looking after some business that he had to transfer up there in connection with his patents, and they were slow getting down here, and They lived down here for maybe a year and a half. Kept writing, mother kept writing to us to come. And finally Margaret says, we better go. She's not going to live too long. And she said, I'd hate for us to stay up here until she died, way off down there. So we didn't do a thing but resign our position. I was a pharmacist and a good one, and I could have registered without having to go to school at all. I just knew all about how to make tinctures and what to do, you know, and fill prescriptions. Knew every drug in the store.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, boy, I was really.
1893,
they came. In 95, Margaret and I came.
Uh-huh.
We landed here the very afternoon that the freeze started.
Uh-oh.
We came through St. Louis in 10 degrees below zero weather.
Mm.
And that big freeze of 95 was on. And we never saw out of the car windows for the frost. Frost was a quarter of an inch thick on those car windows all the way down as far as Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
And that, there we ran into this second night. We traveled all of the first night, left up there in Missouri at 7 in the evening, and came on down to Birmingham through Nashville on the L&N Railroad. And when we got to Birmingham, it got night, and it was still so cold that I had on my overcoat in the car, and we hadn't seen out of that car through the windows down that far. And when it got night, I went to sleep and slept over into middle Georgia, and when I waked up, I was sweating. I had all that clothes on, you know. And we ran out of the cold spell for temporarily into summer weather.
Mm.
Boy, it was really hot. When we got to Jacksonville, it was one of these soft, moist, foggy mornings when the sun wasn't shining sun up. But along about 9, the sun came out, and then it was real summer, Florida summer weather. And on the way from Jacksonville on the old JT and KW Railroad, which was standard gauge at that time, down to Palatka, we went through Green Cold Spring and along all the way down there. When the cars would stop at a station, we could hear the birds singing outside, and the mockingbirds were just tearing the air with their voices. And the scent of the orange groves, you know, was floating through the train, and we felt like we had landed in paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Got to Palatka, we had to change cars there from the JT and KW to the old Florida narrow gauge. You didn't know about that, did you?
I heard about it.
Well, we got on that narrow gauge train and came down here to Rochelle, and then from Rochelle down to Micanopy Junction. On the old Micanopy Short, we came into Micanopy and got off at Rock Spur out there, just a mile and a quarter east of town.
Mm-hmm.
And the wind was blowing out of the northwest, and it was turning cold when we got there.
Mm-hmm.
And my first job was to hunt some wood and build a fire in the fireplace for us to keep warm.
Mm-hmm.
And the niggers had been picking the oranges in the grove, and they had about 60 boxes on the ground. Then they had built fires and were standing around the fires to keep them warm. And they never did another bit of work, and they left those oranges hanging on those trees and freeze. Father couldn't do a thing about it. He had contracted with Avery and Owens, a firm that had a big warehouse down there at the in the section near the depot where the mill is now. And he had sold the crop estimated about 600 trees, moxen on the trees, for $1 a box. And he couldn't do a thing about it, of course. It was their business to gather them. Nobody had any idea what was going to happen. But the next morning there was ice everywhere, and the fruit was frozen on the trees and stayed frozen for 3 days.
Oh.
Ice for 3 days. And we had lost our grove and all the fruit. And it's a wonder we hadn't froze to death.
Yes.
We weren't used to anything like that in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Folks were had been in summer weather, and were used to summer weather, so they couldn't take much cold.
Now, is that out close to the grove there? Is that out close to where Mr. Boyd lives?
Right next door to Boyd. Boyd now lives on the old Slappy place, which was just across the lane from our grove.
Oh, yes.
And my father and Slappy, after the freeze, planted watermelon seed from melons that they had bought up there, and one at Evanston and one at Effingham.
Mm-hmm.
And he called those, he named those melons by those names.
Yeah.
The Effingham and the Evansville. Mm-hmm. And they each planted their places there, their groves that had frozen. They plowed that land up. It was well fertilized and rich. Muck planted in the ground.
Oh.
And it was rich as it could be, and you could step from one watermelon to another. Some of the round ones were about that big around.
Yeah.
Some of the long ones about that long and about that big around. There were those two kinds. And they filled a car and shipped it to New York to a house up there, commission house. And in time, they got back a check for $25 for that entire carload of melon. Prettiest things you ever saw in that car.
Yeah.
Oh, they were beautiful.
Huh.
And the car was loaded, one end with the flat ones and the other end with the round ones.
Huh.
And they notified them that they had arrived in bad order, and they couldn't save much of them, but they sent a check for $25 to pay for that whole carload of melon. Well, there's no doubt but what they made a fortune out of that load of melon.
Yeah.
They just refused it, you know.
Yeah.
Called bad order, and then bought it for the freight charges, and of course sold them.
Hmm.
And Jimmy Simonton had sent a car up there. And he didn't do a thing but get on the train and follow his car up there and took his mill lady with him. And when he got there, he went around to the house he had sold to. And he stood around a while and kept looking at the melons here and there around him on the floor. And finally, somebody waited on him. He said, "I want a melon. I want the best melon you've got in here, a Florida melon." And he says, "I don't care what it costs, I want the best you got." Well, they showed him every kind of a melon. They didn't find his out there in sight. And finally he says, "Well, you haven't got what I'm looking for." And he starts to go out. They says, "Wait a minute." He says, "Maybe we've got something in our warehouse back there that you can that you like." Took him back there, and he went around and looked at the different melons, and finally he saw some that looked like his. He says, "Where'd you get these melons? These are what I've been looking for." They said, "They came from Florida." Well, he says, "That's the melon I want." He says, "I want to buy one of those." So he bought one. And he was about to, it was time for him to leave, and he started like he was going to go out. And the fellow says, "Wait a minute." He says, "Don't be in a hurry." He says, "Maybe you've got something else down there in Florida that we can use." He says, Jimmy says, "Wait a minute," he says, I do want to ask you some questions about where you got these melons. Where'd they come from? What part of Florida?" And it turned out that he had bought his own melon, and the man had showed him their mill lady. And Jimmy says, "Now I've got what I want." He says, I'm here to collect for that carload of melons I shipped up here. And you've got it in your warehouse there." And he says, "Here's my bill, lady, corresponds with yours." That man was, he was just simply stumped. He didn't know what to say or do. Jimmy says, "Now, mister, you write me a check for $1,000. And he says, "We'll call it square." He said, "If you don't, I'm going to sue you." The man sat down and wrote him a check for $1,000 in a few minutes. He didn't hesitate at all. He knew he had stolen those melons.
Mm-hmm. How about that now?
Well, that's the way ours went, no doubt. We couldn't do anything about it, of course. I brought a 100 bushel of tomatoes. Our vines were as pretty as those by the fence there. and just loaded with fruit. That land was very rich. It had been heavily fertilized and mucked. And we raised that first year a patch of tomatoes. And mother and father said they didn't want to send them up north. They may have sent a crate or two and got back nothing for them. So they abandoned the patch, and I says, "Can I have that patch of melon?" And they said, "Yes. What are you going to do with it?" I said, "I'm going to take them down here to make an opium and sell them for cash." And I began to gather them, put them in a wagon body, and I carried one or two loads down there to Avery and Owens, and they gave me 30 cents a bushel, measured in a half a bushel measure.
Mm.
And I picked and carried them 100 bushels. And I'm the only person that ever made anything on that group.
Hmm.
What do you wish I'd do?
I had them last year.
Yeah.
This year, though, that freeze in March killed the bloom.
Uh-huh.
If you can use one. And those plums are that big around and yellow.
Oh, they are. Is that right?
Just loaded with them.
Yeah.
2 years.
Uh-huh.
But this year they froze.
Oh, you've got a nice place here.
Yeah. I found it last year, but this year that freeze got the bloom.
Oh, look at that beautiful little magnolia you got.
I took that out about 5 or 6 years or 7 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it's about ready to grow, isn't it?
Well, those children are going to pull every grape that comes on the vines over there.
Yeah.
Green.
Yeah.
They won't be ripe, you know, until long enough.
Well, they
July, and they'll pull every one of those green grapes.
Yeah.
Trying to find a ripe one.
Yeah. When did you see Mr. Boyd out there?
He'd been in here lately, about less than a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
See my little banana bush I put out the other day?
Mm-hmm.
It's growing off beautifully.
Oh, yes. They make a nice, nice little tree, too.
Yep. There, and it's they're green. They're as hard as flint. You couldn't eat one, even when they turn ripe. You can't eat them. They're so hard.
Yeah.
But cooked. They're the sweetest thing and the tenderest thing you ever saw. Just almost equal to the California. And just it blooms beautifully.
Uh-huh.
This is an old oleander, and it's dead, and I'm going to take it up.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to try to save those because they're doubles, and this one's a double white, and that's a double red.
Uh-huh. What happened to them?
Huh?
The weather got them?
Freeze.
Uh-huh.
They're little poinsettias. That bloomed last year, and it bloomed again.
You put that out?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The corn tree over there, and it's just loaded with fruit every year.
Yes.
I doubt if there'll be as many this year, though. Nearly everything got hurt by that March freeze.
Yeah. Well, now, that's the reason Paul stands out, and he amounted so much more than a lot of them. I don't think, of course, he had so much more sense, Cecil. You don't have to have sense to get along the world.
So I have to have a bit of sense. Well, just a common sense of humor and agree with everything.
It don't take a great deal of sense, brain, mentality, and all them things to get along. You can do well. Fella can.
Well, I was talking to a fella just the other day. He owns several thousand acres of land down in the western part of southern part of Marion County. And he said that he always just taken everything to the Lord. And said he studied over the thing and said it always worked out just right. he just had faith and he just kept progressing and progressing. I said, well, listen, you mentioned something about the Lord just saying, I said, when you and I were talking, he always took it to the Lord. I said, do you give the Lord any money? And he said, you know, I used to didn't give a dime hardly. And I got to prospering and says, one year I give $100. And he said, I thought that was a lot. And he said, the next year, said, I made $20,000. And said, I was scared not to give none. And said, I've been scared ever since. And said, I'm giving it now.
Huh?
But said, I'm scared not to give.
Yeah.
Says, I don't know as it's a thing to give all the time. I said, well, 10% of it belongs to him. See, you know, you can just ride along with somebody like that, you know, and be looking at some of their stuff, you know. And, you know, you can kind of talk to them and just see how they feel about Christ, see.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I believe it helps, don't you?
I believe you can talk better about it on the side like that than you can just confronting the question.
Yeah, I do too.
If you don't feel something.
And he said he was scared not to give something to the Lord now. I said, yes, sir, I sure do.
Well, how many of you know the member selection this morning?
I read it.
Can you read it?
Read
it to us. It's something you should know, not something you read.
It's that water that's been told again, folks,
didn't
run
didn't,
3 weeks, day and night.
Oh, really?
Didn't shut
day
off.
Didn't even shut it off.
Now, on that, that's it. Aren't you on Sunday school early? Or am I that late?
It's 11 o'clock.
Well, I know, but you're not time to go to class.
Yeah. We got truth preaching quarter off. See,
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I came in here to preaching, but I got here so late I was ashamed to go in. Ashamed.
Come on around the front. We got a place for you.
Always an extra place?
Yes, sir. Got books?
How about you taking this class today?
See
you. Yes, yes.
I'm a help.
How many has that book? Without a little hope, there ain't much to take place, is it? Well, the other man's paid for it. All prepared. It's just a different meal.
Different meal, yeah.
We appreciate something from the outside.
Maybe still beans and...
Yeah, that's right. Still big beans.
New potatoes, but it tastes different.
Yeah. Didn't go around, he come back, didn't he, through the place?
Just a glutton for punch.
Yeah.
Yeah. That he could walk up that long mountain, one thing.
There's all rocks. There's lots of people that's healed there. They can jump up and walk, and they see, they talk, and they do things that, there's a whole lot of people, they just don't believe in it. They think it's a real fake story, you know,
mm-hmm.
A big show that's being put on. But,
there's a lot of times you see them walk up there all crippled up and walking with canes and things of that sort. And whenever he touches them, it seems as though they walk off real good. And for whether it lasts or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they bring them back years later. Oh, just constantly they're bringing somebody back that's been there from a number of years back.
I don't think he isn't a god or anything like that. Christ healing of people by faith. I don't know.
No, there ain't but one God. That's the big mistake that people make today is having too many gods.
Mm-hmm.
They got a God for cash, a God for automobile, a God for makeup, a God for new cars, and Well, just a big show. Get the name in the paper if it's, there's just so many gods today that that people work so hard for, but the God that means so much to them, why, well, he's been here a long time, and he's going to be here a long time yet to attend to that business later.
Yeah, but we don't see anybody that we want to elevate. See, the man that comes around that sells us an automobile, you see, we don't think he's anything special. And I just can't get into their point of view of this.
I think the best demonstration of the day and time now, though, is when, you take a big movie star or some big rich man comes into a place, everybody just gathers around him and acts like he's the only thing in the city right then. That's a form of worship. Whether you regard it so or not, it is a form of worship.
Well, that ain't the fool of the man, that's the fool in the people.
Yeah. But
you're fooling yourself if you make a God out of him. You ain't fooling him, eh? You ain't fooling God, eh? You're fooling yourself.
But now, Cecil, he may have something there now. He may have something there. Now, I don't run around with, I don't feel that way towards the movie people. And as far as I know, I don't towards the rich people. But I imagine if they did come around. I remember one time we had over there in our house a general. Now, you'd think the world's full of generals. It wasn't our friend, but he was a friend of some people we knew. I remember very definitely that there was a whole lot of cow-cows. Just the mere fact that he was a general.
They kind of worshipped him, didn't they?
Now, see, and some of them actually made a sort of sight of themselves.
They're not exactly worshiping the person, but the fact that he's on this higher elevation, they have a tendency to be pushing him a little higher.
Yes, when he don't particularly care about it.
That's right, when he doesn't particularly care about
it. It says, we are told that power corrupts. Why is it so difficult for people to use balanced judgment about themselves?
Yeah.
Now, you know you can't climb that ladder to heaven. Them people, when they were trying to build a Eiffel Tower, they ought to have known that they couldn't get there, but... they were going to try it.
Well, I think the basic thing wrong with most people is so many of us have the same thing in us that the rich man had that came to Jesus and asked him how he could get to heaven. When Jesus told him he had to give up all of his property and money and everything to get there, I think that basically too many of us have the same feelings he did, that if he had to give up everything like that, then he didn't want to go to hell.
You can count me out of that, Bill, because I don't have anything.
No, you don't have any, but if you suddenly come into a big pile of money,
oh, ain't no telling.
You don't know whether you change or not, do you?
No. I might be automatically changed.
That's right. 99 times out of 100, you would change. All of us would. Now, I don't say whether it's for good or bad, but you will change. One way or the other, it would either help you be a little better, or it would turn you against the right. But it would change you.
Well, now, Jesus didn't have all that respect for the rich man.
No.
But now, the rich man and your move actress you mentioned a while ago, now, they both, wherever they go,
but Jesus understood the fact that the love for his wealth would hinder a rich man getting into the kingdom of God more than it would a poor man, because a poor man didn't have anything to feel like it was tying him down to the world. Where a rich man, where he's got a lot of possessions, he feels kind of tied down to the world, and he hates to turn it loose.
Well, now, how do people act when they come in
contact with people like that, with rich people and, you know, famous people, whether they move actors or actresses or what. How did... Are you going?
My sister told of an incident of the Dr. George Davis, I think his name. You break down for you. Davis' wife is related to my sister's husband. This is that's how it is. But anyway, she went to the reception, and I think she served some of the in the reception. Kara said that she was just an ordinary person there. Nobody knew anything about it until Mrs. Davis announced that she was the cousin of the bride. And then all of a sudden, everybody began to recognize her and wanted to get to know her simply because she was disciplined related to the bride.
Well, now that's not deifying like they do here, but it's in the same cow-cow, ain't it? The old Chinese word, kowtow, anyway.
Actually, I think the biggest difference it makes, though, is when a person acquires that notoriety or wealth or whatever, it's kind of fast. You take a lot of people that really work for their wealth, and they build it up over a number of years. They have far more respect for that wealth and what it can do to help the world than the one that can make it real fast. It seems to go to his head and it changes him in the wrong way.
He'd take a little respect.
Yeah.
A little cow
power. He hasn't had time to acquire the respect that it can do for him to help him and to help the ones around him. It comes too fast to him. It kind of overwhelms him.
Now, Cecil, you hobnob with important people like that. I don't. I don't know anybody important.
Well, the important thing about it is, and the fact is, the truth of it is, that people that have respect for wealth, if you cut the interest off on it, you've done struck a sour note. Now, we've got lots of good preachers today, but you cut some of them's pay, just a few of them's pay around, and see what comes. How will you hear? There's no way on earth. Yet God says he'll provide for his own. That's what the book says. Mm-hmm. Him being a preacher, he ought to know that, realize, understand it, and feel safe and secure in it if he feels like that he's one of God's own. But you just cut his pay and see what kind of how you get out of your best or your poorest preachers or the middle class of preachers.
He's got to meet his payment, you know.
He don't depend on God for anything. He depends on the Almighty Dollar for everything here on earth. He's not like the man that's acquired lots of wealth. You just cut the interest off of what he's got. And there's no end to what you hear from him. He's got to have it. That's the only thing that he feels like he can really hold on to and open his hand up and look at it, just get a peep at it and grip it real tight again, see?
But now you see, I don't know that, because I don't know any of those fellas. I don't know that.
You ought to know some of them, sure.
Well, I work for a rich man. I don't mind telling you he's a rich man. I believe he's a rich man. He gives away around $95,000 to $100,000 a year. I figure a man give away that money, much money a year, he must have some money, must give it away. Year before last, he gave it to the Central Florida Junior College. Last year, he gave it to the Boy Scouts of America. So I haven't been there too long, so I can't jump around, but I kind of feel around with him, and I talk to him about the good master once in a while when he and I together, you know?
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, we're trying to build a little Sunday school rooms over here in our little church. And I said, sometime when some of that money is fluctuating pretty heavy, I said, how about letting me have some of it? And he said, well, I believe in giving to any good cause. Anytime it's for any good thing or help a fellow man, my fellow man. He said, I think the Boy Scouts of America is a wonderful organization. He gives 300 acres of land to them, building the houses on it and putting down a well and does all that stuff, see. Well, he calls that doing something for his fellow man, see.
Well, that's a good cause.
Well, I guess that's a good cause, just like you say. We get to talking once in a while. We get off on the Lord, see. And he used to would kind of push me to the side, but now he kind of, he'll talk about it, you know, and he tells me what denomination, a year or so later, he told me what denomination he's Presbyterian, see. And his granddaddy was a Presbyterian preacher, and so is the case, and see. I'm feeling him out long and long and long, just to see how much Christ he's got in him, see. And once in a while, something will come up, he said, you better go, because the preacher's waiting on you. So and so is the case, you know. You know, they kind of have that little slang about him, you know. Sometime on Sunday morning, they grab the mowing machine and go to mowing the lawn, see. When they got 7-6 days there, they can mow it. I'll say something to them. I said, you mean to tell me you got to wait till Sunday morning to mow the lawn? I said, you had 6 days. Why didn't you mow it then? Well, we got to have the sunshine, get the exercise. Well, I said, you could have got that yesterday instead of down there fishing. You could have got that exercise down there yesterday.
Well, now, he don't go around commanding respect like that.
No,
nobody,
no.
Nobody much treats him.
He don't
like
want nobody to know him, see. I mean, he knows a lot of people, you know, and everything, though, but I mean, he don't want, when he does this, he told them people he didn't want no publicity on all this stuff. He didn't want no publicity on giving this property and money and all to the Boy Scouts of America. Though, but they put a little lot in there about like that, see, they couldn't help that, see.
Mm-hmm.
But he don't like nothing like that, see. But I think that, you know, I'm a poor man, see. I think a poor man, though, can kind of feel him out sometime and reach in there and get that Christ out of them if it's in them, and you can find them out then. And I believe just a little bit more touching along will make a good man out of them. Don't you think that that's what goes along sometimes to make people see Christ a little better? Tell them about it.
Yeah, it helps, but they ain't all these giveaway programs just what they you would picture them to be.
No, I know that.
Now, we got a little outfit right here in Micanopy, a little art museum. And I've been told by one of the close associates there that that is a money-making scheme that they'll show these different paintings, show them, they'll get the Art Galleries Association to praise at a high price. After you've shown them so many times, you have so many people. That runs the value of the people. You just give them a stop to wink at it one time. You ain't got to do much looking. If you just pass it by.
Never thought of that.
Just get the bird's eye view of it, see? The man is making enough money that he... The scheme is to go into this little art gallery, and they'll get the art appraised for a high value, and then they give them away. Well, you get that much deduction on your income. Well, thing is that they figure by building this little place up here in Micanopy, no bigger than it is. We all know what Micanopy is like, and but just to start that thing up there and show these pictures, these paintings, and then give them away, they can save $250,000 just by giving away those pictures on the income tax, because they haven't cost them nothing. It's like our country.
The man that owns that business and all that, is that rich? You think he's rich man enough to have to pay that much income tax?
There's more than one man in it.
Oh. Well, I know one.
It's just like a box. It's got more than one side.
We have passed that night, and I bet you there's as many as 100 automobiles there.
I didn't realize that.
And going in to see that art.
Well, that's true, too. I do.
And they were having a serving something. I don't know what they were serving, but you could see them through the window, you know, as you passed. They were serving something around the table, and they were eating and drinking. It was beat the band.
Coffee.
Most of being married.
I always coffee and not. Could have been.
Punch.
Most of people, next day and time, they are always doing something, you know, because they can get that off the income tax, maybe, and so and so. But not all of them. A lot of them will give, you can take that deduction of what you give to the church, see, off just as well. And a lot of people are giving more to the churches and things like that than they used to. I don't know whether they're giving it in good faith. I don't care nothing about dropping a dollar in there if I'm going to begrudge or putting it in there, the way I look at it. If you're going to give something and begrudge or giving it, well, I don't figure that you're getting much good from the Lord by giving it.
Well, the way I see it on this big giving, that is just a manly act. It's not a godly act, because if it had been a godly act, he wouldn't have ever taken it away from the poor people to start with. Now, you don't hear of rich people just running up and grabbing the other fellow's bank account and going with it. They take it a penny at a time from each one.
Get more work that way.
And then if they're going to give it, they ought to give it back a penny at the time back to where they got it from. Don't take it and give it all in one wad someplace over yonder.
I'm not exactly taking that from anybody, but it seems to me like that's a good business proposition that man is doing. I know big companies set aside so much money for advertising. If you put a picture in the paper by an ad in the paper, certain picture, not too many people would go there. But if he gives them away, then they'll come down and look at them, wonder what it's all about. And more people he can draw there to see those pictures, more interest that they'll get in the art. And maybe because I'm quite sure that other stores and other businesses give things away just to create business there. I think that's more of a form of advertising.
Yeah, it's a form of advertising, but you pay dear for all of it.
Yeah, but I mean, I pay dear for it.
There ain't no way in the world you can take money out of this pocket and throw it out, John, and just make it come back into this one. The same money's either got to come back, it's got to come back to some other source, and it's got to come from somebody.
But if he's maybe some poor artist that has spent a lifetime painting, maybe he can give a few of his things away that people would become interested in this man's work and start buying some of his products. Same way if the horse ones in here again.
Well,
they're created those to get rid of a lot of income tax, but they've given a heck of a lot of people jobs around here too.
Paul, he's been painting some great pictures all of his days. And they have offered to give lots away. Give you salvation to last forever. But how many has rallied to it? They've tried to advertise the Bible, the Christ, the God, the Creator, the one that sends out the sunshine and rain. But how often do we stop to think about it? We go on our own. We make our decisions. There's very few times that we go to God for decision on something. We always decide and we go that way regardless of what the results are. Now sometimes we think we have prospered lots by it because we make money by it. But the same things can send our souls to hell. Our little prosperity. We can be just a little too conniving sometimes and take away the little things. You know, the book says that your sins will be visited unto the third and fourth generation. We might think, well, we're getting along fine today and just prospering by the things we do, and that the Lord ain't stopping us and a thing in the world. But when we think of the next generation or two, the sins that can be visited upon them for things that we have done. We might have sins visited on us for what our foreparents done. Paul, he had more regard for the people and the places that he had been. Where everywhere he turned, he got that thorn a little deep in his side than he did for his own safety, for the people, for his converts. You can go out here and build up big treasures here on earth for yourself. And the more you build, the higher that ladder is for you to fall into the pits of hell. It says to love the neighbor as thyself. And you ain't going to get a big pile built up there with your neighbor suffering. Just so that you have something to show. Now Paul, when he went way back on the backwoods where he couldn't go no farther, he had to turn around and come back out. But he didn't holler easier way back out. He come right back through the same places because he was concerned for the people where they had preached and healed and done good, and he wanted to know that he was still with them and at their side for anything they needed. He didn't go through there just to take credit of having the lame to jump up and walk. He goes back to see that he was still walking and talking and being merry.
Let me raise a question about what you were saying. I'm not sure what you were saying, Cecil, and I don't know. I sort of have an idea along that line, but I'm not sure exactly what that is. But it seems to me like you and Ernest differed slightly. Ernest seemed to be tolerant of this particular case, and you were laying down the law and a little bit more strict than he was, apparently. Now, I have felt for a long time that religion or the gospel ought to go hand in hand with a sort of morality and a sort of economics. That is, the people who are in religious ought to be fairly scrupulous, you know, about how to make a living, and then their attitude towards the world ought to be the same way. I was surprised this morning. Preachers don't preach that way much, for real obvious reasons. That, you know, the man down in Tampa, Roy Mason, he said, he's preaching on judgment, and he had a text, but he said, he talking about the church people, they would dispense alcohol all week in those little stores, and be the undoing of a lot of people, disturb their private lives, their lives. And then on Sunday come to church and do just like anybody else. Now that's been a little bit more particular than I imagine most preachers or most anybody else would like to be. But still, you feel that. You feel like the message ought to be tied to the way a man makes a living and behaves, don't you? To finances and to morality.
That don't go with church people. They've been preaching all the time. Put $100 more on the gallon of whiskey. Let the old drunk pay for my child going to school. I don't pay no tax on my property, but Mr. Yo come along and they've been playing on that yo-yo ever since, and they're still going to be running that little string up and down on that yo-yo. For a long time to come, the taxes had to come. It got to where there wasn't enough church people drinking the whiskey to send the children to school. Now they got to tax their homes. Now, I ain't disagreed with Ernest at all. Advertisement is good. But now where the final road forks here, it's what the destination is on either fork. That's the thing, the point.
Judgment.
Yeah, you could make lots of profits, but the book says it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to go to heaven. A You can advertise and make all the profits in the world, but if it's going to take you to hell, what have you gained?
Well, it'd be a wonderful thing to just do away with whiskey and beer all over the world and not have it at all.
All the medicine, there's 99% of the medicine
that
you take.
Well, that doesn't have it for that, but for as far as...
Do away the people that wants to make a hog of themselves, that don't want to be a Christian. Do away with the people that wants to be the glutton for whiskey.
Well, I don't have any of it, but, and not in my family, but I say if they do away with it all over the world, it'd be a lot better than the way I live there.
You think it kind of goes with families?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I said it didn't bother my family by drinking or buying it, but there is a lot of people that have to go without food. Just because people drink and use their money to buy beer and whiskey. And if it was out of the world and they couldn't get it, why, maybe it would be better.
A lot simpler.
Be wonderful.
Well, it's been a practiced thing, and when you read your book, what has come in the future, it says that when there's peace here on this earth, after all these wars and rumors of wars, and I'd say probably a hydrogen bomb when there's one out of every seven people on
the
whole earth is killed.
All over the world,
after this time, we will have peace on earth. And the Bible says that your wine vats will be overflowing and your grain bins will be bursting. Now, that's the only two things that they speak of being plentiful, that there'll be not one creature on earth that'll be hungry or wanting for anything.
Well, maybe that kind of wine man won't make you drunk that you don't have.
Well, old Lord, that's the first thing he done. He got to where he could find some grapes, made him some wine, and got drunk, and he's the only one that was fit to be saved.
But that was afterwards.
Well, this is afterwards, too. It's been a custom all the way through. It ain't in the wine or the whiskey.